Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Such pleasure to have you with us. And I hope you'll stay around through the whole hour, because later on we're going to ask listeners to share with us their favorite offbeat museums. Maybe it's a little hidden gem, just a tiny little museum. Maybe it's just flat out weird. We want to hear about it. That's coming up later this hour on KPCC. But first, you might have heard the story that yesterday Alabama lawmakers gave final approval to a bill that has a chemical castration as a requirement for some sex offenders being released on parole. Chemical castration involves taking medication that blocks testosterone production in order to decrease the individual's sex drives. Now, Alabama is not the first state to do this, including California. Actually, back in 2010, passed a very similar piece of legislation requiring repeat sex offenders to be chemically castrated. The question is it ever used here in California? Joining us is former trial prosecutor in the L.A. County District Attorney's Office, now a criminal defense attorney, Dimitri Gorin. Dimitri, good to have you with us again on Air Talk.
Hey, good morning, Larry.
So have you ever seen this chemical castration used with a sex offender in this state?
I have not. I've done this for 25 years, both as a prosecutor and a criminal defense lawyer specializing in sex crime cases. I have never seen it implemented, ever.
And why do you think that is? Because it sounded from the legislation passed here that it wasn't optional.
Well, the legislation is in Alabama. California, we're a little more liberal here, and the law states that it's discretionary for the inmate to decide to want to do it if he wants to. But on a second-time offender, it would be required. However, under California law, the sex crime sentencing regime is so punitive that on a second time, if this happens a second time around where you're convicted of having sex with a minor under the age of 13, for a second time, you really are going to get a life sentence. So it's not really something that is ever implemented. Second time around, you're going away for life.
Okay, so as a practical matter, it wouldn't be implemented because of that. You have any sense in other states, would that be less likely to happen that a second offense against a minor would put you away for life so that this chemical castration would occur?
I think it's probably very similar. Again, we're the most liberal state, I would say, in the country. And I think the other sentencing regimes in other parts of the country are also very severe because, hey, you've had a chance the first time around, be it on probation or a little bit of incarceration. You come out and do it again to somebody under the age of 13. The law takes a very punitive view of that, and you're likely not getting out.
We're talking with defense attorney Dimitri Gorin, who for many years was prosecutor. He was a deputy DA in the L.A. County District Attorney's Office. Also joining us is Justin Levitt, Loyola Law School professor and former deputy assistant attorney general at the Justice Department in the Civil Rights Division. Professor Levitt, always a pleasure. What do you think of these laws?
I think they raise a number of constitutional issues. I don't know that there's ever been a direct challenge. But one of the reasons why the law may never have been implemented, as never got suggested in California, is because there are some pretty serious constitutional concerns. One, they tend to only implicate men and not women. And while men are by far the vast majority of sex offenders, they're not the exclusive sex offenders. Two, the right to procreate is something that the courts and the Constitution consider a fundamental right. And with a lot of protections before the state can mess with it. And three, actually, this involves a chemical composition change to the body. And that's certainly not normal penal procedure. It has been approved. Different forced medications have been approved in very select instances, but there's always really high constitutional scrutiny when that happens. And as I understand it, there's an ongoing debate about whether the sorts of therapies at issue in the laws in California and in Alabama and some of these other states are actually effective for most of the sex offenders where they might be required.
Now, this only applies when an individual is out on parole, right? And we know that there are limitations to constitutional rights when someone is actually in custody. You don't have a right to procreate when you're behind bars, right? So why wouldn't the government's right to intrude on that constitutional right extend to the parole period?
It's a question about the premise, actually. So I would say there's a lot of dispute about whether you have the right to procreate when you're behind bars. If there's, for example, ways to be involved in artificial insemination or other means to procreate, some individuals are already pregnant when they are in prison. And the Constitution protects, in many circumstances, even in a controlled environment, in a controlled security environment like prison, protects those fundamental rights that we have. You're right that there are certain conditions that that we place on parole, but they tend to be conditions that we could place on people if they were incarcerated. So, for example, if you're on parole, the government usually has the ability to search your house and your property at any time without any reason. That's true in prison as well. And it's, I think, a running debate, a running constitutional debate about whether and under what circumstances people can be forcibly medicated or have forcible medical procedures on them in prison. And the same would be true, perhaps even more strongly, when folks are out on parole.
And I would assume, and you may have even said this and I missed the point, but that in a judge being the one who makes the decision about whether it's appropriate for this medical process to be used, you would take issue with the judge being the gatekeeper?
I think that there are having a judge make the decision is certainly more constitutionally in line than having it be a mandatory condition or a mandatory term. But yeah, we have done, and history points to the reason why, we have allowed judges to administer treatments in the past that we now look on with extreme constitutional skepticism. It used to be the case that judges were permitted to permanently sterilize individuals who were committed for psychiatric treatment or involuntarily committed for other reasons. And we look back on those episodes now as a shameful part of American history and not one to look pride in. So I think there are real constitutional concerns here. As I said, a judge making the initial determination limits the extent and the circumstances when it can be used. And so that gives me a little more peace of mind in terms of constitutional protections, but certainly doesn't take the problem away.
We're talking with Loyola Law Professor Justin Levitt. Also with us, Las Vegas-based attorney Elizabeth Dean. She's written for the Chapman Law Review about the constitutionality of the mandatory chemical castration for sex offenders on parole. Ms. Dean, thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk first about the effectiveness of this. What does research in using this drug that lowers testosterone, what do we know about its ability to make a past offender less likely to reoffend?
It's very interesting because with this type of therapy, it basically lowers the testosterone level of the individual undergoing the therapy so that it kind of removes their sexual drive, their sexual desire. That doesn't mean that they can't be stimulated necessarily, but it basically removes from what a number of pedophiles who've undergone the therapy say, it's basically removed their compulsion, their desire. They feel that they're not going to get in trouble. They feel that they have a higher ability to engage in self-control, and it's basically made them a safer person. It's very, very effective, and as was mentioned before, there's a very delicate balancing of the interests that has to go into this, and in addition to being incredibly effective, it's one of the least restrictive measures that have been used over the past several decades. There were certain states that used to require physical castration, which I think we can agree is incredibly intrusive and unconstitutional. There have been different therapies experimented with, And there had even been some, I believe it was back in the 1940s, where they were even contemplating neurosurgery. And I believe up until 2008, the rape of a child was considered a capital crime in some states. So with this therapy, I think that this opens the door to a much more reliable form of treatment than and a much more workable form of treatment than any of the past methods, which I think we can agree would have been at least somewhat, if not entirely, barbaric, and allows us to move forward to actually treat the offender as a whole, as opposed to, as was mentioned previously, just locking them up for a life sentence.
And once an individual has concluded parole, they're no longer subject to this under these chemical castration laws?
Once the individual has completed their parole, I believe it is that's yet to be fully established, being that it is very rare these individual undergoes. The individual does have the second offense for which they're on parole. But my understanding is that in the states that do implement chemical castration, it's very highly monitored, so that it's kind of determined later on at what point they should be able to cease this therapy. And many of the offenders themselves wish to continue with the therapy because of the fact that it allows them to no longer feel these compulsions and consider themselves a threat.
Robert in downtown Los Angeles says, I've taken this testosterone suppressor. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, so I took it as a pre-treatment. I used it for 6 months. Actually found it helped me concentrate at work because it took away my sex drive. It was temporary for me. That's Robert in downtown Los Angeles. You can share your thoughts about the Alabama and California law that mandates for certain sex offenders usage of a testosterone suppressive drug for the term that an individual is on parole for sex offenses, typically against a minor. 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Dimitri Gorin, back to you. You represent some clients who are facing charges involving sex offenses. Do you talk with them at all about the potential for this if they should plead guilty or if they should be convicted?
Gosh, again, it's just not something that's really implemented here in Los Angeles. It's never a term of parole or probation that I have ever witnessed. I would prefer this to be an option, so somebody who's facing a life sentence can say, look, instead of getting 25 to life and never getting out, I'd like to take these medications and be closely monitored on parole for life rather than be sitting in prison and, you know, never having a normal life. So I wish it was a tool and an option for clients that are facing life sentences, but it's not something the prosecutor's office ever offers. It's never something on the table. And when I was a DA, it was never something I offered. So really, the law in California for sex offenders, as I said before, is very punitive. And based on new legislation, second time around, you're getting 15 or 25 to life and probably never getting out.
So it sounds like you're saying for some of the clients that you've represented, that their sexuality is it's so linked to the attraction toward minors that they would even willingly have sex drive totally go away as a protection for minors, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. I think when you listen to interviews of people who have undergone chemical castration, they feel better. They feel more productive. They don't have the urge. They can be productive members of society as long as they're closely monitored. Yes, they can live a normal life and not be offenders, not victimize anyone. And so I'd love to have that option available in California for clients who choose that over lengthy state prison sentences. And I think most clients would prefer that and would want to have this discretionary option. In other words, don't force it, don't make it mandatory as it is in Alabama for everyone getting out on parole, but make it discretionary and give them the opportunity to prove to the parole authorities and to the judge that I can be successful on parole, I can take this cocktail of drugs, and stay crime-free. I think people should have that option. It's just not available in California.
Loyola Law Professor Justin Levitt, what do you think about what Dimitri Gorin's saying? Does that make sense to you?
I think both of the other guests, both Dimitri and
Elizabeth Dean.
Yeah, Elizabeth also mentioned the fact that some people find this treatment useful or helpful, and by all means, that's fine. Obviously, sex offenses are incredibly serious, and some individuals who commit them are deeply troubled and want to find medical or other ways out of what's driven to this conduct. And so anytime any sort of medical treatment is truly voluntary, then it should be available, and I would hope that it would be available. That's slightly different. And so I think there's a broad amount of common ground there. That's slightly different from either, as Dimitri said, requiring this sort of treatment or requiring it as a condition of parole. And I think courts would be, even if the policy makes sense, even if the public policy makes sense, I think courts are constitutionally uneasy with allowing the government to condition liberty on something that they could not otherwise require across the board. That is, it's pretty coercive to say we're going to lock you up unless, and then implement a series of conditions that they couldn't otherwise implement for people who are already incarcerated. I think that's where the real point of concern comes in from a constitutional standpoint.
Yeah, I want to thank all of you for being with us, sharing your expertise and opinion about this. That's Justin Levitt, Loyola Law School professor. Our thanks to Elizabeth Dean, Las Vegas-based attorney, who's written about the constitutionality of chemical castration for sex offender laws, the piece she wrote for the Chapman Law Review about a decade ago, and Dimitri Gorin, who is a criminal defense attorney, formerly Deputy District Attorney, Los Angeles County. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. Coming up, the Navy's new plans for when pilots see unidentified flying objects, how they should be treated. You're listening to Air Talk. We'll be back in 60 seconds.